ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of ABC News Daily. It's a podcast explaining one big news story affecting your world in just 15 minutes. From ABC investigations to politics, the cost of living, to major global events. Expert guests and journalists join me to explain why the world works the way it does. Follow the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
An act of evil anti-Semitism and terrorism that struck at the heart of the nation. That's how Prime Minister Anthony Albanese described the Bondi Beach terrorist attack that targeted Jewish patrons attending a Hanukkah event on Sunday. As the nation reels from the horror that unfolded, there's been an outpouring of grief both at home and around the world. And while investigations remain underway, the opposition is suggesting the government has left anti-Semitism to fester and should have done more to curb its rise. Welcome to Politics Now. I'm Jacob Greber, filling in for my usual podcast buddy, PK, who's away on a top secret mission, but we have with us today instead.
Hi, I'm Claire Armstrong. Happy to be here.
Lovely to have you here. It's actually a grim day for the two of us to be here doing this pod in PK's absence because, look, there's no getting away really from the one story that is dominating everything at the moment. And I think it's one of those stories that people might have feared was possible, and lo and behold, it has come to pass. So we're recording this early Monday afternoon. It's not yet 24 hours since this terrible attack at Bondi Beach, that iconic location. It's familiar, really, to pretty much anyone who visits this country. They all make a beeline to that beach. They see what that lifestyle's about, and then to have this unfold in that setting is really what's, it's capturing attention around the world. So it began at around about 6:45 p.m. last night. That's when police got their first calls. Two alleged gunmen, a father and a son, we've now been told, opened fire on people who were attending that event by the sea. We now know there are 15 victims, including a 10-year-old girl and one gunman who was killed. And there are still close to 40 people being treated for injuries. So those are the raw facts. Claire, what's your take on how this is playing out now at a national level in terms of the inevitable questions that now come up? Could more have been done to avoid this?
It's a fraught issue to turn to, as you said, within 24 hours of this happening. It is inevitable that there's grief that makes way for questions and then gets to this kind of uncomfortable discussion about accountability. And I think what we are seeing are the early signs in terms of the questions being put to the Prime Minister, the arguments being put forward by members of the Jewish community in Australia, by the opposition. Also, I think there will be questions, as we will see this unfold, put to our security agencies, not so much in terms of the response, which, as has been well documented, there was a very rapid response from police and emergency services rushing toward danger on Sunday evening. As this investigation unfolds, what might have been done or could have been known could have changed. They're sometimes easier questions to ask after the fact, but important ones nonetheless.
It does feel like we've concertinaed from the event to fallout at an incredible rate, even when a lot of details aren't known about the full circumstances of what's unfolded, and we are still within this early period. But we do know that it is a father and son who are the alleged gunmen. One of those is deceased, so there will inevitably be a legal process. The police commissioner a short time seemed to imply quite strongly that that person was likely to survive. They have injuries, and then they would most likely face charges. And then we're also seeing at the same time a sort of national process that's unfolding. The Prime Minister went to the scene, as did the opposition leader, Susan Lee. He's been there also. I think the Premier's been down already as well. And now this afternoon, a series of cabinet meetings and cabinet level discussions are being held, including the National Security Cabinet, which is the top body that deliberates on these security issues with ASIO and the other spy agencies that operate in this space. And then this afternoon, we've got a national cabinet. What's your expectation for what comes out of that national cabinet?
I think what we will see play out here is, on the one hand, the investigation and the actions of security agencies will play out. There will also be a subsequent discussion that has already started about the rise of anti-Semitism in Australia, the role of the government in addressing that, its efficacy in its attempts to address that. And in terms of where you look at a national cabinet and where it's likely to move, there's a couple of things that are pretty obvious to me. There's obviously a discussion that needs to be had about whether the gun control laws that this country is so incredibly proud of remain fit for purpose. That is something that you need that state and territory cooperation on. National Cabinet is a perfect setting to start that very early conversation. As we know, the guns, as far as the police have said, the guns involved in this incident were legally held and obtained through proper licenses. So that's one issue. On the far more complex issue is of social cohesion, not just in terms of specific steps and measures taken to address anti-Semitism in Australia, but whether enough had been done at different points when we had what people in the Jewish community, I think, quite rightly point to an escalating situation in recent years where you had specific targeting of Jewish people, Jewish institutions, the lighting on fire of synagogues, the targeting of cars with anti-Semitic slogans. That broader discussion is a lot harder to legislate around, which is often what you turn to for a government in times of a crisis. But there has to be something out of National Cabinet, I would imagine, this afternoon that speaks to where our country's leaders are thinking of going on this issue.
So I can certainly say that my sources today have indicated to me that the gun reform is very much on the table. So maybe we'll just quickly talk about that first. Chris Minns, the Premier, also saying very clearly he wants to move quickly on guns. The concern is around these rifles, these long arms that were used yesterday. These are weapons that are used quite often in agricultural settings by farmers, I think for pig shooting and pest control. But Minns saying today very, very clearly, if you're not in an agricultural setting, you have no business owning one of these guns. Now, I remember the gun debate back in the day. I'm old enough, been around long enough to remember that. There was a massive public upswell of support for that legislation. As you said, it had to be done by all the states and territories at the same time, and it's globally famous. In America, they constantly point to the example of Australia's gun laws, but it was also politically quite challenging, particularly for the Howard government, particularly for the then Queensland National Party government, which actually subsequently lost a state election. So there was political fallout. What's the political mood now, do you think, for this type of reform?
Well, I think the interesting thing about this is you have a almost wall of Labor premiers, and with the exception being Tasmania, and then the Chief Minister in the Northern Territory and Queensland. So in the sort of bigger, heftier states, expect there'll be quite a lot of momentum and they will be able to generate quite a lot of support. Interestingly, I think the coalition feel on much safer ground prosecuting the need to address the social cohesion issue. It was interesting to me that in Susan Lee's first press conference this morning, she was quite firm on her belief that the federal government had failed in addressing anti-Semitism and that more needed to be done. Then when she was pushed on gun control, she talked about if legislation needs to be passed, we'll deal with it. But she also quickly said, well, you know, there are still people in hospital and it's a bit early to be going down every single policy path as a result of this tragedy.
I think a little bit of that's a little rich for the for this pudding. I mean, she'd literally moments before made really quite a strong political statement about the Prime Minister's responsibility for not combating anti-Semitism in her view. That it was okay to talk about that while people are quote unquote in hospital recovering, but not address this other issue of these weapons being used and whether it's appropriate. So I think you're right. There's a hypocrisy there. She has a difficult conversation to have with her own side on the gun issue, where there are members in the coalition who want gun laws actually to be eased, not tightened. But is the community then elsewhere, when they see some of this footage, when they see these images of the way these weapons are used against human beings?
I think so. And as much as there is obviously a strong contingent in the community for very valid reasons who want to retain access to ownership of these kinds of weapons, that is not the majority of the community. And it is, in a way, politically almost uniquely a problem for the coalition and specifically the Nationals, because we're talking about those rural settings. And as much as there are other people who obviously, you know, I believe the police commissioner said today in New South Wales that one of the perpetrators here was a member of a gun club. So they're clearly, you know, involved and using a gun in that way. There are fewer, I think, of those kinds of people in the community that would be worried about losing that kind of access, as opposed to the overwhelming majority of Australians who have probably never held or seen a gun in real life.
And so there's the gun bit, and then there's also this debate now that's really just exploded all over the place today about what it is that governments can or should be doing about anti-Semitism. There have been warnings aplenty, and I think the most prominent warning outside the Jewish community has been talking about it now for 2 years, really, nonstop. But the strongest warning in my mind came from the ASIO boss, Mike Burgess, back in February. So getting close to a year ago, 10 months ago, where he said that anti-Semitism was the greatest threat to life in Australia at the moment, or words to that effect. It was a very strong statement back then. And lo and behold, here we are in this terrible, terrible, frankly disgusting situation where that has come to pass, it seems, and there is now serious loss of life. Is there an argument that they perhaps didn't heed that message firmly enough? The Prime Minister would say no. He says he's appointed a special envoy to look at anti-Semitism, that's Julian Siegel, and that she's produced a report which has been on his desk, I think, since June. So he I'm not sure what you think, but did they not do enough, or is this the sort of thing where it's impossible, really, because you have two individuals who undertook this act?
It's a fraught issue to interpret so close to the event. There are some initial reports confirmed by authorities that the son of the two gunmen was known to authorities due to some like connection association with extremist elements. There's something to
That's a report on the ABC by one of our colleagues that there is a connection, that they did look at this individual back in 2019.
Yes.
Over links to Islamic State.
Islamic State. Yeah. And so on the one hand, I think it is reasonable that to an extent you could have all the action on addressing anti-Semitism that you could possibly ask for, and that is not always going to mitigate against a lone wolf extremist actor in the community. This is the kind of incident that security agencies have long been warning for, that is the hardest to mitigate, because it essentially comes down to trying to read the mind of a random individual out in the community who over time comes to form the view that this is how they're going to behave. That's not necessarily a product of the environment entirely. There are other forces at play. However, it is very clear that there have been these warnings for a long time, that there is a general feeling that the government has created a permissive environment for anti-Semitism, that by not having clarity around when it is important to distinguish criticism of the Israeli government and its behaviour in relation to the war in Gaza and just the mere existence of Jewish Australians, when that is not clearly delineated in public discourse, when a predominantly peaceful protest does feature symbols or signs or flags that are linked to extremism, linked to anti-Semitic beliefs, if that is not called out, if there is not proper protections across other institutions, then to what degree does the government have responsibility? I think most people would say that there is a role there for government. And if you've had a report spelling a lot of this out for 6 months and you haven't formally responded to it yet, I think that a lot of people might reasonably conclude that even if you are internally taking it seriously, it hasn't looked publicly that you are.
And then I think that's a really good point, Claire, because this government and this Prime Minister in particular likes to talk about the process. He likes to talk about doing things in a measured, considered way. He likes to, you know, cross all his T's and dot all his I's before he makes the announcement. But this event now has sort of overtaken that. If he was indeed moving down this path to adopting some, if not all, of those recommendations, and by the way, the opposition has said that they will support all of them, carte blanche. They're not arguing with any of them. And so they are offering, bring back Parliament just before Christmas, whatever it takes, they're offering that support. I just wanted to go back to one last point around, did we do enough? I'm wondering as a country whether the ball slipped a little bit in the last few months.
I think a few points. There's nothing, for example, in the Gillian Siegel report that I think demonstrably could have, if every single recommendation was enacted, that you could say with any level of certainty that the events of Sunday wouldn't have happened. Initial reports are suggesting there was a degree of security present at the event. I think I turn to the words of Labor MP Josh Burns, who is a prominent Jewish member of the Parliament and represents quite a big Jewish community in his electorate in Melbourne.
And a member of the government.
And member of the government. And he spoke this morning to a sort of cultural reckoning that is upon Australia more broadly and also progressive politics about whether there was a situation that allowed for the dehumanization of an entire people over the course of the public debate around issues like Israel-Gaza. And I don't think anyone looking, reflecting on most of their own behaviour and themselves could honestly say at this point that absolutely everything was done at every level of every institution to take this issue as seriously as people in the community had been asking for it to be taken. And I think the problem that everyone, the government in particular, face here is that the Jewish community were not silent about their concerns. They were very prescriptive about the areas that they were worried about. They constantly warned about the escalating nature and the targeting of the incidents. And it has felt that has almost become such a constant of the debate around these broader issues over the last 2 years, that those warnings, as they've become more frequent, didn't actually carry the weight that they should have. So in the broader question of could everyone have done more, I think the answer has to be yes.
Yeah, I think that's the terrible conclusion. It's one that will be discussed, I think, for quite some time. These things lead to quite a long reckoning usually, and I would hope it does again, and that the failings where they are can be addressed. We'll have to wait and see on that, of course. The other really interesting thing has been, I think, the international reaction to all of this. President Trump was very quick to come out with what I thought were quite empathetic statements of solidarity and concern. You had similar lines from Emmanuel Macron, Keir Starmer, other world leaders, Joe Biden offering his condolences as well, and condemnation of anti-Semitism. What was the response from the Israeli government? How would you characterise that? It was a little different.
Yes, although not outside of expectations given past behaviour, I would say. We had Benjamin Netanyahu essentially leaning in quite heavily into this incident being linked to what he perceived was the Australian government's inaction on anti-Semitism. He directly linked it to the recognition of Palestinian statehood in September. You know, this isn't the first time he has personally criticised Anthony Albanese on this broader issue, but to do so in the backdrop of this huge, horrific loss of life was quite confronting, and I'm not entirely sure that helpful to the point he was even trying to make. Like, as I've been caveating everything I have said so far, we don't know exactly what happened. We don't know motivations.
The extraordinary thing about his statement was it was really within moments. It was well before some of the more basic details were confirmed.
It was basically linked off the fact that we knew it was the first day of Hanukkah, and that there was sort of early reporting that this event had occurred, and he instantly linked it before we really, I don't even think the active police situation was over.
Mm.
It was very quick, that response. But as I said, not entirely unexpected. And as my far more learned colleagues, Matt Doran, who's our Middle East correspondent, was saying to me that, you know, Netanyahu is under a lot of pressure at the moment, and he does latch on to these external events as something that he can build into his own narrative, and that seems to be, to an extent, what has happened here. I think, you know, going back to the international reaction more broadly, and going back to how you started this episode talking about how iconic Bondi is, and this is not to say that if this had happened, you know, in a shopping centre in Penrith, that it would have been any less horrific and tragedy, much of a tragedy. But I think there is something the world can really visualise and really grapple with in a way that is very unusual, that everyone has an image of this place. And to then see people fleeing for their lives in their thousands is a really shocking event. And it does evoke this emotional response, as it absolutely should, but that is almost why the politics and the politicians have to be even more careful.
Well said, Claire. I think it's also notable, I guess, up until about 6 o'clock last night, the political obsession was still around expenses. The ongoing row scandal, call it what you will, about politicians' entitlement spending. There's been really no commentary about that today. Obviously, that's completely wiped from the political agenda for now. Is that it for that, or does that come back perhaps this week?
I think we should say bookmarked.
Bookmarked.
Because, you know.
And there was some movement afoot to address that issue, I understand.
There were reports that there was going to be some announcement out of a cabinet meeting today. That was a regular scheduled meeting, that the government felt that the pressure had built to such a level. We had Attorney General Michelle Rowland confirmed that she would pay back a portion of a north of $20,000, I think it was, family trip to Perth where she was working at the time. I would say this issue's had a pin put in it, very reasonably so, but as is the case over time, we will move on to other issues. And I think this is one that will be waiting for Anthony Albanese when his attention is there to be given to it.
Bookmark that political scandal, put a pin in it, as you just said. Claire, thanks so much for being my guest on Politics Now today. And hopefully we get to do this again one day.
Yeah, thank you. And to anyone out there, I would just say, stay safe, check in with friends. Lifeline is 131114, an important time to just wrap everyone's arms around each other.
Hear, hear. And tomorrow, PK will be back with you for more updates on how this is all going to unfold with Laura Tingle, the ABC's Global Affairs Editor. That's tomorrow. So if you've got a question for us, please send us a short voice note to thepartyroom@abc.net.au.